Previously on Popping Collars.
So Luke Cage is very important to the Jessica Jones comics because ultimately they end up getting married, they have kids, they have a whole sort of superhero family.
Oh,
but
what?
Spoilers!
It's okay. It's okay.
They're like the Incredibles.
they are like the Incredibles.
Oh my god, that baby would like
be beautiful.
Like both, it would injure her from the inside. What would it do? Oh my god!
They're two very attractive people.
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection between religion and pop culture. I'm your host. My name is Greg Knight. I am in Palm Beach, Florida, and with me are my co-hosts, Betsy Gonzalez from Alexandria, Virginia. Hello, Betsy.
Hello, Greg. Currently in Alabama.
Traveling.
Yes, on the road.
Liz Easton from Omaha, Nebraska. Hello, Liz.
Hey, Greg.
And our special guest from Alexandria, Virginia, Gideon Pollack. Welcome, Gideon.
Thanks, Greg.
This is episode 29 of the 1,481st ranked podcast in the iTunes spirituality category. And our topic today is Star Wars, The Force Awakens. So just to prepare you in case you don't want to go down this road, this is going to be spoiler heavy. So just a disclaimer.
So many spoilers.
Just to catch everyone up who lives in a galaxy far, far away. A little movie came out last week and promptly made the Disney Corporation $250 million in 3 days. So, look, this doesn't need a whole lot of intro. Force, Jedi, Stormtroopers, space, you know the drill. Liz, you're fairly new or fairly unfamiliar with the world of Star Wars. What was your takeaway from the film?
Yeah, so I'm not like so unfamiliar that I've never seen the original trilogy. And in fact, I remember like really vividly watching it as a little kid. My brother, you know, had all the action figures, Luke Skywalker with helmet, Luke Skywalker without helmet. So the big cultural pieces, like, I totally get. I will say that I had to read like some articles, some Wikipedia and stuff to really get ready for the movie. But I loved it. Like, I loved it. What I found just the best about it was sort of the catharsis, I guess, the cultural catharsis and the sentimentality of like seeing these people back at it again and like picking up where we left off, the relationships, of course. I even had moments like I choked up probably like 3 or 4 times. Like, I got a little teary.
It's so hard because they're all so old. And I was 5 when I met them. And it's like looking at them is like looking in a mirror, unfortunately. But I think Harrison Ford has better hair than I do still.
Harrison Ford's looking good, I think.
Sounding bad. Looking
yeah.
good.
But I actually loved that piece, the aging characters, especially with Leia and Han. And there was like, sort of this maturity about them, like grown-up people who look their age and are kind of coming at it with all this baggage and stuff. I loved that stuff. I loved Chewbacca.
I felt like it was what I've been looking for. And I think that that's where my emotion came from, is that it touched that emotion from so many years ago when my mom couldn't get a babysitter. So I ended up going to the movie. So, you know, it's like...
Yeah, I feel like the nostalgia piece was heavy. And you touched on that, Gideon, this idea that you used to be 5 and now you're this. But the movie is trying to put you back into that mentality of sort of being 5, take you back to that world as best it can, right?
Yeah,
like
it's interesting as well because I've spent a lot of time, I teach a course at Episcopal on reading the Bible to seniors in high school. And we spent a lot of time this semester talking about trying to sort of make sense of where we are in our lives now as we approach the narrative of the story of the scriptures. And we talked about the transition between sort of pre-critical naivete, where you just sort of receive the stories as possibly factual and true, and then the sort of post-critical skepticism that we're in as kind of semi-adults who are being taught about the way the world actually is and how to move between that kind of receiving it as true, as a narrative that has lots of meaning, but some of that meaning is rooted in its truth, and then kind of dealing with a sort of more metaphorical, multi-layered sort of narrative that has lots of different history. And we talk about that in Scripture. And I think the same is true for me as I kind of watch Star Wars. It's, you know, I no longer believe that it was possible, that it was true a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, that the Force worked through people like Luke Skywalker. And yet, now that I'm, you know, 40 and watching it again, I'm feeling the same feelings I did as a five-year-old. But now that I'm sharing it with my seven-year-old, they're deepened in a way. And his nostalgia, his sort of pre-critical reading of it is just so much richer to me. And so I'm thankful for Star Wars in a way, because it's kind of connected me with a childish feeling that I haven't had in a long time. And you know, Betsy and I went to see it together on Thursday here in Alexandria. And afterwards, I was really struck where, Liz, where you are, just kind of with so many feelings and not even being able to be critical of some of the flaws or some of the callbacks or some of the sort of pop culture stuff that I knew I was missing because I just was so emotional about it.
You know, I think that that's a really fascinating idea, this connection piece, right? And this sort of connection across generations, because you're talking about, with the original trilogy anyway, you know, a movie franchise that's had a gap of 30 years. Now, we'll take the prequel stage out of it. So this is connecting one generation to another generation. So something that you loved as a kid that you're kind of trying to share with your own kids. And I think one of the things that was fascinating about the original trilogy was that, you know, at its heart, it was the story about a family. It was about Anakin Skywalker and his kids' friends and how these people were all interconnected and all how they were all woven into each other's lives. And I think that what really came through in Episode 7 that didn't come through in 1, 2, and 3 is this family aspect, the role that the family plays, the generations that come before you and how they affect who you are in the present and what those connections are and how these pieces are woven together. That thread of family was just such a huge piece to the new Star Wars movie. And I think that that's where a lot of the emotion lie. It was in sort of seeing those connections on the screen while also sort of seeing those connections in your theater as you were sort of sitting next to each other. Mm-hmm. I think there's something about, we've touched on this a couple of times, this idea of nostalgia. I like to think of it as sort of like echoes. I think when George Lucas was writing the prequel trilogy, he said something about it's almost like writing poetry and it's like rhyming. You're trying to rhyme one movie with another movie. And I felt like that was something, that was a goal that sort of J.J. Abrams seemed to come into this movie with, was this idea of we're going to echo some of the sentiments of Episode 4, you know, as best we can, as we're setting up this sort of new trilogy. So you see kind of the, you know, the mentor has to sacrifice himself. You know, the hero's journey has to start at a place of, I'm never going to leave this planet, and then all of a sudden the entire galaxy opens up to Rey. And so you start looking for mirrors, right? Who's mirroring who? Who's the new Luke? Who's the new Han? Who's the new Leia? I mean, it sort of sets up that that's how you're supposed to view these characters, but maybe not. Maybe they stand on their own as their own sort of unique creations in this world.
The interesting thing for me is how the extension that Rey offers in both for both Han and Leia. Mm-hmm. Which I think made some of us walk out of the theater going, what's going, you know, is there like some hidden twin situation going on? Like something, because of the way, you know, the way that even when Leia was, you know, initially this damsel in distress in the first movie, she is the humor of Carrie Fisher. That is like, you know, what are you doing? You guys are idiots, you nerfers and whatever. And, you know, get it together. And that. And she does the same thing, like those moments when Finn's trying to grab her hand in the market, and she's like, quit taking my hand, stop, you know, I can do this.
What did you think of Rey, Liz?
I loved her, and I loved that this movie passes the Bechdel test. So it's like this idea that there are like different criteria for a movie basically not being empowering for women, or just even being neutral for women. And like one of them is that women have conversations with each other that aren't about men. You know, so anyway, all of the women characters I thought here were pretty well-rounded. And I loved the diversity of the cast in general. It was kind of surprising in a way that it shouldn't be surprising these days, but it is. It was a very diverse cast. But I loved her. I loved that she was able to be kind of vulnerable at some times and show her feelings and what she was struggling with. And she was just totally tough. I mean, she was a young woman who kind of raised herself in a really scrappy way and felt super loyal to her family and did what she needed to do, and I thought she was a great addition.
I think we've talked long enough to go ahead and move on to Kylo Ren, who is probably the greatest thing ever in the history of movies. It's the fact that what Kylo Ren has over Darth Vader is the fact that he can take off his helmet and you can see what's going on underneath. The problem with Darth Vader was that he was in the helmet and you just had to kind of accept on Luke's word that Vader was conflicted and was trying to figure out where his role was. You know, was he given over to hate or did he still have good in his heart? With Kylo Ren, we know exactly the conflict that's going on, and it's because Adam Driver is able to take off that helmet and show us the conflict that's going on. And I just thought that that was a great kind of mix up of that whole Vader trope of sort of the internal fight that's going on for the villain.
Oh, I was just going to say that he was a great choice in casting. I didn't even know that he was in this movie. So when he took off the helmet, I was like, what? That's the guy from Girls? You know, there were some cheesy parts of this movie, I'm just going to say. And I think kind of some cheesy acting. But he wasn't one of them. I thought he was totally sincere and a really transparent actor.
He was conflicted, but he wanted to be evil. He wasn't conflicted in the way that, like, you know, sometimes I'm conflicted where I feel like I have some bad choices, but I want to make the right one. He was conflicted in the way that he had lots of choices and he seemed to want to make the bad one. So like when he's asking for Han's help, you know, on the bridge there across that great chasm, when I watched it again today, you know, I was reading it from the other side and thinking what he wants is he wants to kill his father, and he wants his father's help in killing his father. Whereas his father thinks he wants his help to not kill his father. It's like so interesting that what he really wants is to choose the evil as opposed to the good in every scenario. And that's the fight, is that sometimes the good wants to be chosen, but he self-consciously doesn't want to do it.
Like there's an element of playing dress up that he is trying so damn hard to
be
bad.
That's why the mask. He doesn't need the mask.
He doesn't need it, but he needs the outer coating, the shell, this of being bad, that he just can't. He's trying to cement it, and it's just not coming naturally to him. And when he runs into Rey, where the Force comes naturally in her, even though she has zippo idea a little bit how to control exactly what's going on with her, it's suddenly like, oh no. What am I going to do? What do you do with that?
And I feel like that was a moment where he was no longer exceptional. Right?
Yes.
I think that must have been hard to take because he killed all the others, and so he kind of thought, you know, here I am, the exception. I'm the one who lived, and turns out there are others. That's got to be hard, and it's a girl.
And it's a girl. Good. She's really good with this balance in the Force, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much that's been talked about in terms of the religion of Star Wars. And where Lucas pulls things from, you know, is it Taoism? Is it yin yang? Is it balance? Because that means there is always going to be evil. Are we trying to eliminate darkness? Are we trying to make it go away? Or is it really this Zoroastrian, this transition from Old Testament to New Testament? There's this introduction of light and dark and good and evil, this dualism that exists the same side of the same thing, and it gets woven into Christianity and woven into Judaism after they spend time with the Persians for a while. And I've wondered about whether, if it's supposed to be balanced, we're always going to have it. And is it always balanced inside us, or is it that we're really trying to move towards light and dark? And that's what Kylo has been making me think about that I hadn't thought about before.
Well, there was that scene where he was talking to Darth Vader's helmet, but it felt, until you saw what was lying there on the bench, it felt like he was praying, right? I mean, that was the sense that I got. And he's saying, he's so frustrated, and he's like, I feel it inside of me again. I feel the light side of the Force again. And to me, like you said, Gideon, for me, that experience is usually the opposite. Like, oh my God, I feel that bad thing. You know, those bad feelings are my shadow side or whatever. And like, God, please help me to balance that out. But so it's...
Yeah, it always seemed to me that the Force just was. It's neutral, and it's how it's used, that it can be used for great evil or for great good. And I felt like that the conflict, the difference there between kind of the radical Yahwism of the Bible is that all good and evil are within the compass of God's creation.
Just kind of incorporating the idea of the echo from episode 4 to episode 7, the death of the mentor moment. You know, in episode 4, it's Ben that dies. In episode 7, it's not Ben that dies.
Ben
it's Ben
kills.
That kills. And, you know, the beauty of episode 4 is that if you go back and watch 4, 5, and 6, you could identify that moment when Vader strikes down Obi-Wan Kenobi as the beginning of his path to the back to the light. Ben tells Vader in that moment, if you strike me down, I'll become more powerful than you ever realize. And I think that power is his ability to change the way Vader is starting to look at the world. And I think that you're right. This idea of choosing evil, that's what's being mirrored in that moment with Ben Solo killing his father, is him choosing the dark side, choosing that path, and trying to eliminate the light. And isn't it gorgeous the way that it's shot, that in that moment when he kills Han, the light fades from the sun and the light fades from the planet and the light fades from Kylo Ren.
I have a theological question, you guys. I don't mean to take us off script.
No.
It's more of a philosophical question.
Okay.
What are droids? Does the droid... Oh, look at that droid. Like, does he have a soul? Does he have... I don't know.
Well, they're like children. I mean, in a way, in that universe, there are no children. But, like, watching BB-8 go down the stairs to the basement of Maz Kanata's saloon, right? He bumps down the stairs like my two-year-old does. You know, he goes down the stairs the same way. And he's got a very childish kind of innocence. And he absolutely seems to believe in the characters all around him and believe in their best in a way that is very childlike. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think they're kind of a stand-in for innocence, maybe.
I mean, it's ultimately BB-8 that makes the call as to whether Finn is going to go on this adventure or not. And BB-8 approves. And so, therefore, he has some power in this story. Mm-hmm.
How much do you want to see a scene by scene of that basement flashback? I just want a frame by frame of what she saw.
What's down
when
there?
She touched that.
Yeah, like,
there's all these, you know, it's got to be out there soon. But there's a lot going on there, and I feel there's things I missed. And now when we're going to go see it again this week with my daughter, and so I'm like, I want that scene.
Videotape it with your phone.
I will not do that, Disney. I will not. Do that. No.
I didn't even know that was possible. You can
that?
Do that?
My phone has a camera. It's very advanced.
Yeah. Someone did that for me. I'm curious about Finn. You know, we've spun a lot of Rey. A lot of Rey's story is out here. And if we're seeing mirrors, Finn is the Luke mirror, which I find really interesting. And I'm not quite sure. I mean, when they got into those, when he and Poe were shooting things together, when he ended up in the same seat Luke was in, but the first time he was on the Millennium Falcon, you know, trying to do that wacky chair with the, you know, navigation, you know, trying to with the targeting. And there was just all of this, even though he wasn't the one from the Podunk desert planet, he was the one who had been on this high-tech Star Destroyer from infancy and been trained to be a soldier. And what glitches in his program that has made him be like, this is crazy, and I got to get out of here and risk everything to do it. And I feel like there's a lot more going on there that we're going to learn as we go forward.
Yeah, this was the first time that I got a sense of the stormtroopers really being people. You know, before they seemed more robotic to me, but he, like, even the time when Ben Solo was, like, flipping out and, like, cutting things up with his lightsaber, and those guys walk by and they're just like, whoa, I don't think I want to be there, and they back away. Like, they just seemed so much more human this time. So there was something even all the more tragic about that. Like, when it showed Finn's baby picture, like, when they pulled up his profile in the big bad ship. This is the best I can do, you guys. You know, you saw his picture as a little boy, as a little baby. I mean, he was kidnapped by his family and raised by these people, and it all just felt so much more human to me.
Never so showed signs of disobedience before.
Right.
Yeah, well, this is the first time we see stormtrooper blood, which I don't feel like we've really at least seen in a 4, 5, 6 kind of way, right?
This
more hand-to-hand combat, you know, more lightsabers to the chest per capita than
so horrible.
Any other.
Lightsabers to the back. Lightsabers all over the place.
Right.
I don't think he's Luke. I think if he's anything, he's Han. Hmm. You see that kind of, you know, grabbing Rey by the hand, being all sort of masculine and macho and believing he can do anything, and sort of naive without a lot of thought, you know, just kind of moving on to the next thing, claiming to be resistance, lying when he's not, you know, and the heart to heart from Han about women always find out, you know, it seemed like it was a bit of a transference there of this is my role, I'm giving it to you kind of deal than it was about sort of Luke. I mean, I think he's a neat character. He's not as fun as Han.
I was just profoundly sad by what happened to Han. Like, I was shocked by how sad I was. I wasn't shocked that it happened. I think it made perfect sense for them to kill off a main character. I think that it was actually pretty smart. That was a good choice. But I was profoundly sad by it. And it was something about Harrison Ford's acting in this one. Yeah. I thought he was great. But that final scene with him where he's, like, pleading with his son, and then that betrayal, it wasn't surprising, but I found it, like, incredibly heartbreaking.
But there was a moment when Ben Solo stabs him that I did think was great, where he reaches out and touches his face one last time. It's totally devoid of that shock and that, you know, why, you know, or no, or, you know, anything that we would have, any of the other things that we have gotten from the prequels. And it's just this tender.
It was just tender.
It was almost, as a matter of fact, it was almost exactly like the I know line when he's lowered down into the carbonite. It's just a soft moment. And he did that in a soft way, the way that Han kind of holds those moments. And I thought that that was really lovely.
Well, and the way the lightsaber in his chest, it's almost like that flaming heart. Like, it's almost like it's this burning love for his son that even in this moment is symbolically shown in his death, that there's a connection of father and son. And, you know, those larger issues, you know, we joke about daddy issues, but there's a lot of parental stuff going on here. And this is a continuation of that through a different string in the family.
I love that guy in a way that I don't think I have the same fondness for, like, the other male characters in the movie. I mean, I think Luke is kind of unapproachably, on the first hand, naive, and then, you know, in the end, sort of unapproachably kind of Jedi and other, you know, whereas Han's like a normal-ish guy who is a buffoon the way I can be a buffoon and, like, makes mistakes the way I can make mistakes. And then to see that kind of string of bad decisions ends up with his son murdering him. I mean, it's just really hard to take. It was hard to take that he'd fallen on such hard times that he was back into smuggling again, you know? Like, and when Finn and Rey ask, is this General Solo the great hero of the wars? Chewbacca just sort of goes, you know, like, I don't know. It's been a long time. You know, it's just like, it's so true. The arc of a human life can be so long and have so many phases. And in the end, you know, it's real tragedy that in the end it ends that way, you know?
You know, I know why they had to show Luke Skywalker. I would have been totally content with that movie ending with them getting on the Millennium Falcon, you know, following the map and, you know, credits. But I get why Mark Hamill needs to be in the movie.
He worked so hard.
Beardy. He worked hard to lose weight.
Beard.
He looked like a total badass, though, in that moment, didn't he? Like, I've always thought Mark Hamill is a little goofy and... Yeah, he did. I mean, he just looked like this maniac Jedi badass, like, standing on a cliff. It was great. I actually had chills.
But he also, he looked like he had weight. Like, he looked burdened. And I think that it's sort of this burden that comes with knowing that it's your fault that there's this dark Jedi kind of taking over the galaxy. But it's also kind of this weight of being the last of his kind, this weight of being sought after by so many people, both good and bad. I just thought in that moment, like, he looked so sad. when she held the lightsaber out to him, it was almost like this lesson from Yoda, right? This idea of your weapons, you won't need them, right? He's trying to get away from the war. He's trying to get away from fight, and he can't get away from it. And I think it just looks so melancholy there at the end, where he's like, even here at the end of the world, like, I can't get away from all of this stuff.
Hmm. Well, and you know, there's a part of me that wants to like shake him, and be like, what are you doing, hiding out? You know, there's a bunch of people who actually need you, you know. So I think there's this other element that I'm pissed at him, and I want him to kind of get back in the game. And what will this next phase look like? You know, is she going to enter training with him? Are we going to have that tandem training because Kylo Ren has not completed his training? So those two trainings will be very interesting. While at the same time, I want to see what happened with Ben Solo and Luke. I want to see what happened, where things went wrong, you know, off the tracks.
There's something about the Walter Wink myth of redemptive violence here. I feel like Luke is trying to opt out of this pattern of violence that doesn't seem to, you know, to bear any fruit. But we want him to get back in because we're so, you know, we, the audience, are so patterned by it. You know, he can't opt out because it's going to be what saves the world. Is someone's got to go in there and kill everyone. That's the only way forward. But it's just so, I don't know. It's so true and yet at the same time so false. I don't know. But he definitely had an intensity in that last scene. I don't think he was going to take a lightsaber.
No, definitely not. Yeah. I mean, it comes back to this idea of monasticism, right? Is that a calling? I mean, and is that Luke's calling? I mean, it's certainly a calling, but is it Luke's calling? And unfortunately, it doesn't look like it.
You were going to make, I sort of feel like I know how the movie is going to go, but if you were going to rewrite this movie on Christian principle, how would you rewrite the next movie? Like, what would Rey and Luke, what would their training be? How would they defeat the evil of the dark side without violence? Would they be, you know, they would be the sacrificial offering? They would somehow, what, you know, what's the Christian Star Wars, the next one?
Well, all I can go on is the wisdom of Yoda, or the Bible, I can't remember, where it says, wars not make one great. So
it's got to be Yoda. I feel like
that sounds like Yoda. With,
truly,
it's not
truly
Jeremiah? It's not Jeremiah? Okay.
It's got to be Yoda.
Pieces segment. This is a chance for us to talk about whatever pieces of pop culture we've seen or experienced or want to talk about. I'm going to go based on how you are on my screen. So, Liz, what's a piece of pop culture that you would like to fill us in on?
Oh, man. I've been sort of on a documentary binge on Netflix recently and have watched a lot of good ones.
Ken Burns? Is it you on Ken no, Burns with me?
I'm sorry, Betsy, no. One that I watched that I almost hesitate to talk about because, like, I don't want – it would be inappropriate, I guess, for me to recommend this to an all-ages audience. But it was actually produced by Netflix, and it's called Hot Girls Wanted. It was, I think it was directed and produced by Rashida Jones, and it's about you know, amateur porn stars who, like, respond to ads on Craigslist and then move to Florida for, like, a month and do pornography. And they're kind of eaten up by the system. And anyway, it's super fascinating, very tragic. There are sort of alternate narratives of, like, empowerment for some women and then real not disempowerment.
Exploitation.
Yeah, exploitation. But what was disturbing for me is they would keep showing statistics about different pornography sites that have more hits per day than, like, CNN, MSNBC, like, Google, all combined. I mean, people are watching a lot of porn out there. And that, like, that's a thing. That's a thing that's going to affect our culture. And for us, it, clergy folks, it's affecting our people, too, and no one's talking about it. So that was interesting and disturbing and well done, but, like, don't watch it with your kids in the room.
Betsy, what's peace?
Peace pop culture? For me, non-Ken Burns related.
What?
Right.
What?
Right, I know. It's been a lot of that lately. But Broadchurch, I've been watching that hot off of my watching of David Tennant in Jessica Jones from our last episode. I thought I remembered somebody mentioning this Broadchurch show. And I love the actress he plays opposite. I've watched her in a lot of, in The Rev, you know, one of my favorite portrayals of clergy on television. And so the two of them together, just amazing. And just I'm not a big serial, you know, criminal serial watcher, like, you know, like a, I have my time. I think we all had a time when we watched more Law and Order than we probably should have. But I haven't done that in a really long time. And so to have a small town rocked by a crime on the coast of England and to watch the different pieces and the secret that we hide and the secret that is ours and how it comes in contact with other people's secrets. But it is a really, really good show.
Gideon,
okay. All right, man.
Do you have a piece of pop culture that you've been following lately?
I've been watching a lot of, I'm afraid to say it because I'm afraid it'll end up being a vague ploy to monetize people again. But, I like watching this TV show, Alaska, The Last Frontier. I think it's kind of got a real heartfelt sort of family trying to eke out an existence against nature and against all odds in a way that's really, it plays into the whole kind of myth of American kind of individualist, you know, pull yourself up from your bootstraps and make a life against nature. It's really lovely, but the families portrayed are really, I think, also interesting, and not in the kind of way that we all found Duck Dynasty was absolutely manufactured, you know. But this is like, they have real struggles, and I don't know, I like to watch it, and it's beautiful also.
So I never watched The West Wing. I'm one of these people. I never watched it. So I just finished the first season, and the first season ends with a cliffhanger of an assassination attempt by a group of white supremacists trying to shoot somebody, the president or the president's daughter or something like that. And I had this moment where I was like, I could start season two, but I sort of thought to myself, I think I'm going to be disappointed with where this goes. So I'm just kind of letting it sit for a little while, and then I'll come back to it later. So I actually started watching Broadchurch instead. Just a reminder, you can find Popping Collars on the web at poppingcollarspodcast.com. You can find our show wherever you get your podcasts, whether that be SoundCloud or Stitcher or whatever application you use. We just ask that if you find us on iTunes, please subscribe so that we can move back up in the rankings. You know, those rankings are dependent on getting new listeners to your show. So click the subscribe button and you'll get Popping Collars in your feed every single time we post a new episode, and it'll be highly convenient for you.
I'm gonna
finally, you can find us featured on episcopalcafe.com. We love episcopalcafe.com. They feature our show each and every single time, and we hope you'll check out their website for any Episcopal Church news and beyond.
And comment on us sometimes. I always feel sad that we don't get any comments on Episcopal Cafe.
With that, that's Popping Collars for this time. Thank you, Gideon. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Liz, for being on the show. Keep those collars popped. I just stole Betsy's line.
Pop,
so, wait a second.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time.